Coming up next on 88.1 FM, a chance to get to know one of your neighbors better on Porch Talk. Like all of our programming, Porch Talk is made possible in part by Watts members, who show their appreciation of community radio by donating to WWER. For more information, go to wwer.org/membership.
This is Dave Tucker, your host and piano player for the Early Jazz Music Review, but today with a special Porch Talk interview with the esteemed Bob Taylor, a local resident of Colonial Beach and working musician who has had a long career in music and other things, highlighted in part by his time as the manager of the Hunter's Lodge in Fairfax in the 1960s, which featured his own Western swing band and many famous musicians out of Nashville, such as Dottie West and Willie Nelson. Later, he moved to Nashville, played in the band for Dottie West, and became a staff musician at the Grand Ole Opry. In this interview, you'll hear stories about names such as Dottie West, Loretta Lynn, Minnie Pearl, Johnny Cash, Patsy Cline, Boots Randolph, and several others. You'll hear about how he got to Nashville and what he's been doing since then. My co-host is Becky Hunt, who lived in Nashville and worked at Opryland. At the time of this interview, Bob is 88 years old with lots of stories to tell. This interview lasted over 2 hours, so we're presenting it in two parts. We hope that you heard the first half of the interview, because this is part two of our interview with Bob Taylor. And we note that both parts of this interview will be archived and available online at wwer.org. Tell me about when you first arrived in Nashville and buying that first house. Tell me that story.
Well, Patsy Cline was married at the time then, when I arrived in Nashville. Patsy had been dead for probably about a year. She got killed in an airplane accident, mm-hmm. as everyone probably remembers. Her husband's name was Charlie Dick. Charlie and I knew each other very well. He would come to with Loretta Lynn's husband to the club quite a bit. Mm-hmm. When I had Hunter's Lodge. And so the very next day that I got them, when I was in Nashville, he came that day and says, "Bob, let's go buy your house." And I said, "Charlie, I didn't come prepared to buy a house." I said, "I still have a house in Alexandria." Mm-hmm. And I'll have to get rid of that first and so forth. "Oh, let's go. We got to do that." Well, he spent the day with me. And we went all over Nashville and Franklin, and of course by the governor's mansion, because right next door to the governor's mansion was Minnie Pearl's house. Mm-hmm. And he was showing me that and showing me all these places. And I said, "Now, Charlie, all of these people are much more established than I am, and I'll have to look for a more economical place." Well, as it turned out, toward the end of the day, we worked our way across town and back toward where he and Patsy had their home, mm-hmm. when Patsy was living. But Charlie was still there at that home. And it was about three blocks from that home, equivalent of three blocks. We saw a brick house on the corner. A big moving van was there, and they were loading it. And the real estate man was driving a sign down the yard for sale. Mm-hmm. Oh, so we stopped there, and I said, "Oh, I can't afford this place at all." And I was used to prices in Alexandria, of course, for houses then. Mm-hmm. He insisted that we go in. That's fine. We did that. And the gentleman that was selling the house was with E.I. DuPont, and had been there at Old Hickory at their plant, and was being transferred to California. Well, he wanted to move that house before he got out of town.
Yeah.
And I forget what the asking price was at the time, but we did a little negotiating and arbitrating, you might say, mm-hmm. about it, and got him down to $16,200 for a three-bedroom brick home with a full basement and drive-in garage and all of that, and on an acre lot on a corner. So then I'm still chucking Charlie, I said, Charlie, no way that, you know, I can't afford this. And after we negotiated, did all that negotiation, but the real estate agent, fortunately, was a real nice man out of Hendersonville, Tennessee. And he said, don't you worry, son. Said, we'll take care of all of this. And he said, what can you do for me? I said, well, I could give you a couple hundred dollars now. He said, sold. And I said, well, when are we going to close on the house? I said, I've got to sell my house in Alexandria before we close. He says, don't you worry about it. He said, I'm sure you'll be successful with that. And well, that was in June. Mm-hmm. And I want you to know that it was in January when we closed on that house.
Wow.
He let me stay in there all that time without paying any rent or anything.
That's a good deal.
Oh, it was a marvelous deal for me. And it was a much nicer home, or as nice a home as a lot of the artists had, and nicer than a lot of them had at the time.
Wow.
So I was quite pleased to be there, because there were other artists that lived in that neighborhood within a few blocks. Yeah. Of it.
Yeah. Name some names.
Oh, the gentleman that wore the overalls on
Oswald.
Brother Oswald for Roy Acuff. He lived down the street. And Jan Howard and her husband, Harlan Howard, who was a writer.
Mm-hmm.
A very successful
writer. I've seen that name.
And, yeah. So they were in the same area, and of course Charlie was still out there, and then there were a number of musicians that lived through the area also. It was one of the nicest homes I had ever lived in, and
wow.
I very much enjoyed it.
Bob, tell me about how you got into the road shows for Opry.
Well, actually, I was just a musician, privileged to work the Opry. Due to my experience with Hunter's Lodge and some other management experience, they would use me at times on a show that was going out if I were hired as a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I would be giving more like a management position over the group when I'd go out. I recall the one I really recall, Howdy Forrester, who was a fiddle player with Roy Acuff, was also in his office where they had working as an agent. And he called me one day and offered me an opportunity to go to Reno, Nevada with a 25-piece cast from the Opry. It would be the first time any country music had been in Reno at Howard's, the biggie there.
Yeah.
We were playing the big room also. Like Louis Prima and was playing the lounge, and we were in the big room. So that was quite exciting, and I gladly accepted that. And
so tell us all about that, and who was on the cast and all.
Well, no, Roy Acuff, of course, was the main artist with his band, and then Minnie Pearl, of course.
Mm-hmm. Great lady.
Great lady. She always looked after me on the road there. If she were being visited by a movie star or some other artist, she'd call me to her dressing room and give me an opportunity to sit and talk with the folks and people such as Mitzi Gaynor and Gomer Pyle and people mm-hmm. like that.
A lot of folks don't realize that Minnie Pearl was a very, very smart, intelligent lady. And the whole Minnie Pearl thing was an act.
Oh, yes. It's very, very much an act. And she was a very intelligent lady, well-educated.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband was a pilot, mm-hmm. had his own plane. And she got to fly to a lot of her engagements. Mm-hmm. He would take her with that. Whereas so many of us were either in a oversized car or extended Cadillac if we were lucky, or a bus. So in this particular case, we were going to be there for 30 days, and mm-hmm. we did. We went. It was Roy and Minnie and Bob Luman, Marion Worth,
mm-hmm.
the Stony Mountain Cloggers. So we had that clogger dancing group, which they were just terrific. It was a family affair, man, his wife, and two of the children were in the group.
Were you performing or just managing?
I was performing.
Okay.
I was staff drummer on on that. It was quite an experience.
Wow.
I rode out to Reno with one of the artists, and in fact, it was George Hamilton the IV.
Wow.
That I hitched a ride with.
Uh-huh.
And that was a great experience. George was a college-educated young man, and he was very interesting to talk with. Had a nice visit on the way out. So I remember going, I sent my drums out on by bus. The bus was a little late getting there that day, but still in time for the show. When I was getting my equipment in the back door, I guess I was a little noisy, and someone yelled at me, and me being in a strange place, I'm wondering, what have I done wrong here? But it was one of the union members' staff there, and he said, you don't touch any of that. Said, that's up to me. Said, that's my job.
Yeah.
And he said, you set that just like you want it. That was after he got everything there and unpacked.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you said it like you want it, and he said, it'll disappear after the show, and it went on an elevator down underneath, and then it would come up prior to the show before the audience could see it. All I had to do was just pick up my sticks. Everything was right in place, just exactly like you left it when you got up that night from the show. And we'd normally do at least two shows a night, and had drew very large crowds for that.
And so you managed some other road shows too, right?
Yes, with Claude Gray. Claude maybe not have been as large an artist or as well known as some, but he was a very good artist and a beautiful voice, I thought, anyway. I took his bus, in fact, and parked it at my house during that stay with him. Did a remodeling job to the old bus.
Oh, yeah.
Inside, we put in some running water and a few things like that. Took out some of the seats and also built some bunks in it so that the guys could sleep a little while we were going along.
Can I just throw out some names and see what you've got? Johnny Cash.
Yes, I had the opportunity of working one show with Mr. Cash. It was in Bean Blossom, Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
As I remember. And it was on a park, kind of a wooded park. Dottie was on that show. Some other names that are slipping me right now, but my age telling on me. But anyway, it was a real good show. He had Mama Maybelle, of course, his wife, her daughter, was on the show. I got to know John pretty well at the show. We had a chance to converse some. But I didn't work with him, per se, other than on some of the big stage shows on the Opry. He would be there at times when I would be working. Other than that, but that was the only major show that I remember working with him, and it came early in my career. One sad note of it was that his guitar player, Luther, and John would always call on Luther, as you know, to take a run or break on something. We went back to Nashville that night from Bean Blossom, Indiana, and unfortunately, Luther fell asleep on the couch with a cigarette burning, and that was his demise. He died with that, and I think it was probably smoke inhalation on the couch, because it didn't really just burn the house, as I remember, so much. He passed that night.
Did you know Loretta Lynn?
Very well. I had Loretta Lynn come to the lodge a number of times at Tahoe's Lodge, and she was one of my favorite people.
That was prime time for her, like her early career.
That was early in her career, and when she still had the little Indian costume that she wore, and But I'm telling you, the lady could sing. And the thing that always fascinated me about her, too, was how easy, well, it looked easy to me watching her, her writing songs. She when she would take a break from the stage, she'd go back to the dressing room, sit there with the guitar, and try to write songs. Mm-hmm. Instead of getting out, and to my knowledge, she didn't partake of the alcoholic drinks that everybody was offering her and so forth. She could write an entire song or two in that dressing room, and most of them would come up to at least get on the charts. If they didn't get to be number one, they at least got in the charts. Wow. Very talented in that direction.
How about Gene Autry?
Yes, that was quite an experience. I had the opportunity of working in the nightclub next to that. Anyway, it's a nightclub, a famous nightclub there in Hollywood. And I was working that, and I stayed overnight in a hotel next door. Mm-hmm. And the next morning, as I was going to breakfast, I was going down the hallway to the dining room, and there comes a stately-looking gentleman out of an office and a tailored Western suit on. And I thought he looked terribly familiar to me. And I waited in the hall till he got down to where I was, and it turned out I had recognized him before he got there, that it was Gene Autry. Mm-hmm. And I spent the night at his hotel.
He owned the hotel.
Gene managed his money very well. Mm-hmm. And he owned that hotel. And we talked, I guess, maybe 15, 20 minutes. And I told him how many quarters I thought I had spent when I was a kid watching him on the silver screen.
We could go on and on about the Opry, but I think we need to just move along. We could do a whole separate show on more Opry talk. But what happened after the Opry? You started managing another musician, right?
Yes, I went into to Prentice Alley and was playing with a group called the Nashville Cats. Mm-hmm. It was ran by Jim Vest, the steel player. And we would hire various artists there, and then, of course, the band itself was a fine band and played country western. Mm-hmm. It was in the room, in fact, was called the Western Room. And while being there, the management company that owned about four clubs in the alley came to me and asked me about my experience with Honor's Lodge and various things, and he was looking for a management person, and I got hired for that. Left the stage. I was in the same area though, walking in and out of the same clubs. I managed about five clubs and restaurants there at the time, and that went on probably, I would say, in the neighborhood of 6 years, maybe somewhere around that. And the gentleman that was in charge of everything, that owned that, unfortunately passed with cancer. His wife wanted my contract. The man had signed me to a 20-year contract, and she wanted my contract, and we parted ways.
But those were good times. You were managing fine establishments.
Yes, and then I had the opportunity then. I had met Boots Randolph. He played in the alley at one of the clubs that I was managing some. I had the opportunity of going with him. He'd been open about a year. And then I stayed with him close to 5 years, I guess, as his manager.
Managing his properties?
His property there, the club. Mm-hmm. And then also, if I had the opportunity, I would book him. Mm-hmm. Although he had his secretary plus one other gentleman that booked him out some, but with the club he stayed there most of the time. He didn't work out that much, and when he did, I'd try to find some fill-ins for him, and there would be interesting artists come in, such as Chet Atkins and Floyd Kramer.
Oh wow!
And people like that. That was part of the Million Dollar Band. When Boots went out with Chet and Floyd, and then they'd have usually two other musicians with them. They were called the Million Dollar Band, and rightly so, because there was they were that was a heavy band. Wow. Really good. And but individually, though, they were each artist in their own right. And it was quite interesting and a good time to get to work with those folks. Yeah.
This was a time when Chet Atkins was known for really developing the so-called Nashville sound, and he was really involved in the recording studios and the big-time production houses and all that. Did you work with him at all? Did you know him?
I had an opportunity when I was with Dottie to work in a recording session. Dottie had a thing of being a little late. She'd run a little late most always. Uh-huh. And we'd been on the road, and here we are. She had a session booked, and we didn't get, I think the session was at 5 o'clock, and we got back in town about 4. Mm-hmm. So we had to hustle to get to the studio, and when I got there, she recorded in with Chet Atkins there, mm-hmm. his studio. I was the drummer. I didn't feel comfortable at all because we had been driving across the country for a long way. You've got to really be on your toes when you go in the studio.
Yeah.
Being as tired as we were, I knew that I wasn't doing my best. Mm-hmm. Well, Chet couldn't have been nicer to me. Mm-hmm. He felt it, and because he's naturally the main one for the session, he gave me an opportunity to maybe try something else, and I did. And then he said, "Bob, if you don't mind," said, "I'd like for you to take another instrument." And he wanted me to take something that was in that a percussion feel. And of course, I was smart enough to know that he could also edit that out at a point very, very nicely. But I thought it was so nice because the session paid good money, mm-hmm. and all of us liked to work a session when we had an opportunity.
Yeah.
They were your high dollar item then, mm-hmm. when it come to earning some money playing music. He had one of his staff people, fine drummer, mm-hmm. he had him set in and take the rest of the session.
Yeah.
But he was very careful not to make it appear that I wasn't quite making it on the session, mm-hmm. or just exactly what he wanted for the session at that point. And I always respected him very much for that. That he could have, you know, because there are some people in the business that would be a little harsh with some of the musicians. Yeah. He treated you with respect. Mm-hmm. And so forth. And of course, I had very much respect for him. And when he played the club, whenever Boots would be out, he was a great act. He'd just have a trio usually, mm-hmm. maybe a quartet at the most. And Chet was a funny man. He was funny on stage. And
man, I would give anything to just be able to sit in or just be there for one night to go back and hear a night like that.
Oh, he was great. Of course, they, needless to say, the people came there to see Boots. However, it may be that they knew he was out that night or didn't know. But one thing they could count on, whenever he was out, we always had a heavy sitting in for him.
Yeah.
Boots was a great entertainer. I enjoyed working with him so much. That was one of the high points, I felt, of my career in the management part there anyway.
Okay, so let's move forward in time. How do you get from Nashville to Colonial Beach, Virginia? It's a big time span there.
Well, at a point in time, I'd been with Boots about 5 years, and his son came out of the Navy, had finished his tour of duty, and his mother, Boots's wife, and his mother were there. She was there at the club every night, kind of overseeing things, I guess. Or she enjoyed it. She mm-hmm. enjoyed it very much. And she got, like any good mother, thinks, well, my son should be running this place. So she came to me and asked me, said, would I teach him show him the ropes, mm-hmm. and teach him how to run things and like they were accustomed to having it done. And mm-hmm. At that time, I figured, well, you know, I see the handwriting on the wall. I'd be better off to seek another career or something. So I did. While I was with Boots then, I started a lawn care landscape business. Mm-hmm. Eventually named it after the city, well, it within the first year, mm-hmm. called it Nashville Lawn Care and Landscape. And I had that 20 years there in Nashville.
That's a major career right there.
It was. I had 7 trucks on the street, and not every day. And there were days that I'd work as many as 18 men a day. And that's a big crew. Mm-hmm. But I did a lot of commercial large apartment projects and things mm-hmm. of that nature, and as well as the smaller. We'd take anything yeah. of any size. I loved the business. I still love it today.
Yeah. Just stepping back for just a minute, as you're leaving Boots Randolph and changing careers, what do you think of the whole Nashville scene at that time musically? Do you think it was changing a lot? Was it becoming more difficult for you to do music? Were you sick of the music business? Which can happen.
Well, it can happen. But it also is a thing that after you stay out of it for a while, there comes a time that you really miss it. Or that you think, well, there are other people your age and of your era that mm-hmm. you were whatever you were in the business mm-hmm. and on the opera, that some you had kept up with, some yeah. you hadn't, but there would be those, and there would be they started to perform in these little schoolhouses mm-hmm. and things like that around that area. If you had the opportunity, there would be some of your friends maybe that were doing that, mm-hmm. and they would call on you, mm-hmm. come and join with them. And I got doing that and did it for, I guess, about 3 years before my wife passed. Mm-hmm. And when my wife passed, my daughter was living here at the beach, mm-hmm. or had a place here at mm-hmm. the beach. She and her husband and my son-in-law, and just insisted that I move here. Said, "Oh, Dad, you don't have relatives in Nashville, and you've been here all those." Now, I was 38 years in Nashville. And said, "You don't have relatives there, and suppose you get sick and this, that, and the mm-hmm. other." So she kept on until here I am. So I've been here now almost 20 years wow. at Colonial Beach.
So I have a question.
Yes.
You played drums mostly when you were in Nashville. When did you start pick up the guitar again?
That was when these friends and acquaintances called on me to work some of the schoolhouses or some people just getting started in the business. They would try to, they maybe couldn't afford a regular band, but they knew you were a player, and they would want you to join with them. And had one little girl I worked with before I left that I think she was about 12, I believe, if I recall correctly, approximately 12. She was played fiddle. She lived in outside of Nashville in Franklin and come from a very good family and a good neighborhood. She was amazing. She was a very accomplished fiddler, and she was taking lessons at Vanderbilt School of Music. What is the name of that?
She probably also was in Franklin, Tennessee. They have one of the best annual fiddle conventions mm-hmm. in the United States. So she probably also knew a lot of other good fiddle players as well.
I was at one of these little schoolhouses one night, and she came in with her father. Her father, I believe, played bass. And she had the fiddle. And then I was sitting there with the guitar. They heard me recording some on the guitar. And they said, "Oh, come join with us and join with her, especially when she performs." So I did. And then they hired me then for a regular thing whenever they had a show somewhere. And I worked numerous shows with them before I left town. But they were just a delight to work with, and I also worked for her at the school when they had a graduation there, and all of them had to get up and perform for the people that whoever came to the graduation thing from the, on the school, and they wanted me. And I went and played guitar for them. And at the end of the show, they had got with the instructor and told her that they wanted me to sing a song, and they wanted to back me up. And they did Faded Love for me with 12 fiddles and me with the guitar. And some of them were aged like 7, 8 years old, up to, I think, 13 or 14 was the oldest in that group. And you couldn't believe that I never heard a bad note in the entire thing. I couldn't believe it. It would make your hair stand up on your head to hear 12 fiddles playing Faded Love and you sing, trying to sing it at your best.
Wow.
And playing guitar for myself then. But it was quite an experience. That was one of the high points of that type of thing.
Wow. Let's talk about your time in Colonial Beach. You and I go back quite a ways, I don't know, nine years or something. But you were one of the first to really attempt to get some music going in this town.
Yes.
There was very little before that. There were some cover bands playing at some, dockside, things like that.
Right.
But downtown, and there was very little activity. Talk about your pushing to get music going in this town.
It's really started with me at one of the private clubs, the American Legion. I had told them there was a musician there from the old Opry days that used to play steel guitar. But unfortunately, he liked the bar better than he did working with me playing guitar. So I didn't get an opportunity to put a band together with him. I worked that as a single for a while, about a year. And then by the second year, I had two other musicians with me then, and three of us doing a Friday and a Saturday night thing there. Then I went and had lunch on the first Saturday at the Episcopal Church, that they had a luncheon there. And I went there and had lunch one day, and the lady that was managing that at the time had a boom box on the wall. And I said, well, you know, I would like to come and start live music here for you doing this instead of just having the boom box.
And what year was that?
What year was it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, golly.
At least 10 years ago.
At least 10 years ago, yeah, at least. I played for a year as a single, just playing guitar. And then I love to go to Florida to vacation in winter. And when I was gone, that's when, I believe, is when you said that you would take it for the winter.
Well, we did that a couple times later. You and I just kind of ran into each other. I was starting to play. This is later, really. I was starting to play a little bit around town, and you had already been playing at Tides Inn. You were the first one to play at Tides Inn, and I was playing just solo there real early on. You came to listen to me, and then we just got together real quick.
That's right. I recall that now.
And we got together, and we just started playing through some tunes, and it was really good from the start. We started playing out, and we called it all sorts of things. We called it the Bob Taylor Trio, or the Dave Tucker Trio, or the Country Road Show, or something like that.
We had a number of names that we used.
And then later on, Becky joined us on upright bass.
Yes, she did.
Been through many iterations.
How many years had you been?
I think it took me 5 years to get her to do it, but
we did it.
She finally did it.
And you're sitting right next to that very bass.
And I knew with her experience in music and having also been a native Nashvilleian at a point in time, I just felt that she would be good on it. And of course, I wasn't disappointed.
Yeah, folks might not realize that Becky worked at Opryland in her youth.
My family's from Nashville. I'm surprised. It's too bad we didn't run into each other in Nashville.
She lived in the Donaldson area, I believe.
I did, on Bluefield Avenue.
Yeah, That's right. I didn't have an opportunity of running into you down there in Nashville, but maybe before you got on the scene, I'd already left. I don't know, but I'm sure we could have made some good music together.
Well, I have one question. When you left Nashville, did you get homesick for Nashville, or were you ready to start a new chapter in your life?
Well, I missed Nashville, to be honest with you. I did miss Nashville. But with the way that my daughter had put it, and you know, now look here at your grandchild. She's got this size now, and you haven't been around her that much. And of course, I was around her more when she was a baby and really enjoyed my time with her, whenever I could spend with her. So I was looking forward to, of course, coming and establishing a good relationship with her. Bless her heart, she teaches school now in Fairfax. Her mother and my son-in-law, her father, they live here now. But they've had a house, I don't know how many years. Since he was a baby, he's had connection with Colonial Beach. And I should mention that his name is Glenn Lewis, and her name is Terry Lewis. Terry and Glenn are starting to become a little more known in the area and getting into some activities here, and I like that, because when you're in this little community, if you can be part of it by participating in some sort of activity, that they treat you awfully nice. We have a lot of good folks here at the beach, and I really enjoy it.
You're playing in different groups right now. We've played together in the past, and I hope people get a chance to hear us again. If anybody hears about the Bob Taylor Trio, they should come on out. But right now you're playing with Robin Redman on drums, and you're playing with someone else on guitar.
Mike Bilstead, I worked with on guitar. And Mike's a very good guitarist and a good singer. He loves to play and sing, and he does a fair amount of gospel work too. And his father's a minister. In fact, his father and I are the exact same age, like in 30 days. He's still preaching down in the country.
Well, I think if we have to wrap this up, I think we could do another 3 or 4 hours easy on Bob Taylor. Is there anything else you want to offer us today? Anything you want to say to the world?
Well, I do want to hope that we have the opportunity before too long to work together again.
Yeah, I want to.
You're one of the finest musicians that I've ever worked with.
And, I appreciate that.
And I thoroughly enjoy your style. You have a couple of three good styles that you can play on piano. And so it's not boring, and you're a very talented musician, and I thoroughly enjoy working with you. Well, so hopefully we'll have that opportunity. And Miss Becky, with that bass, I love that little bass.
We will. It's before you came along, I had not really played country music, and I hadn't played a lot by ear, really. Not purely by ear.
That was amazing.
And you kind of forced me into it, and it took me a while to catch up to you, but
to take a man that was I don't think you had ever played any country music.
Not really.
Unless it was something that Frank Sinatra sung or Bing Crosby, maybe. Yeah. But as a country show, so to speak, I didn't think you ever had played any of that.
That's been fun. He
took to it like a duck to water. Yeah.
One of the reasons why I'm so glad that we met is because all of the things that I missed about being in Nashville are remembered whenever I hear you talk, whenever I hear you sing, and everything about you. So it's like memories coming alive for me. And I really appreciate that you're here in Colonial Beach. And
well, thank
I knew
you.
From the minute that I heard you, I'm not sure why everyone in the Northern Neck isn't over here listening to you, because you're a legend too.
You are a legend. The great Bob Taylor of Colonial Beach.
Exactly.
Well, I appreciate that. Everyone makes me feel very welcome. I'll have to say that. And I've met some very, very nice people here.
All right, well, thanks, Bob. Thanks, Becky. You've been listening to the Porch Talk with Bob Taylor. Thank you.
So at the end of the interview, we decided to very quickly set up our instruments and make a quick recording or two of some music just to tag on to the end of this interview so that you can have a chance to hear what the old-time country road show sounds like. Here is Bob Taylor on lead guitar and vocals, Becky Hunt on bass, and myself on kind of a scratchy piano with Anytime.
Anytime you're feeling lonely, anytime you're feeling blue, anytime you feel downhearted, that will prove your love for me is true. Well, anytime you're thinking about me, that's the time I'll be thinking of you. Anytime you say you want me back,
This has been a Porch Talk interview on WWER Radio with Bob Taylor.
The programming on 88.1 FM is made possible in part by WWER Watts members, who show their support of community radio by donating online at wwer.org/membership. If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership.